It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's going on, everybody? This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode number 60. We are going to dedicate this one to Nick Johnson, circa 2001. That was his number when he got the call. Nick Johnson, a very high prospect in the Yankees organization, lefty hitting, first baseman, had a lot of pop. The ball flew off of his bat. He was also a very homely looking man, but he never really panned out. Scott, what's going on, man?
I wouldn't call him homely looking. I would call him Babe Ruth looking.
No, homely.
The dude looked like, you know, the Babe Ruth type of player. And Nick Johnson was... I wanted him to be my favorite Yankee so badly because the guy could hit for a very high average. He just kind of looked like a baseball player, unathletic yet athletic, and he just got too injured, couldn't stay healthy, and it was a shame that he didn't pan out because I was really really pulling for him.
He had that baseball athleticism where it's good at a first base position where in an 8-foot box he can move pretty good and he can snag some ground balls, but outside of that 8-foot box he's not very mobile.
Yeah, and we haven't seen like a homegrown first baseman in a while, you know, at that time.
Donnie Baseball.
That was the last one before Nick Johnson. So I feel like that was my Donnie Baseball, like, you know, coming back up, and I wanted Nick Johnson to be the next guy, and it just never worked out.
You know, and then do you remember they brought him back after the 2009 yes. championship? And I just felt they got too cute. He replaced Matsui as the DH. And I was just thinking Cashman was getting a little bit too money ball on us. He was going for that on-base percentage versus Matsui, who was as clutch as you can get. I did not like that move when Cashman made that.
Yeah, well, you mentioned pop, too. I mean, you look at Nick Johnson, you'd think the guy hits 30 home runs, but he really wasn't that type of player either. He was more of a contact guy. He could hit it, he could spray it all over the field, and he hit for a very high average. So it was an interesting play at that point. But yeah, his second coming didn't work out either. He had a couple like decent years, I think, with the Nationals, maybe?
Yeah, Nationals. Yeah, it was him and Soriano.
Yeah, so...
I do want to mention to follow us on the Twitter machine. I am at Yankees_talk. Scott is at Scott Reinen, and also follow the website and the show at Bronx Pinstripes, which I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably following at least Bronx Pinstripes, if not the both of us as well. Scott, how was your weekend?
You know, much like last weekend, my weekend and the previous week has been full of laying flooring. So I'm still in the middle of a
you're
of
still
a pretty,
the two man tailoring it over there.
Yeah, dude, this is going to be a reoccurring theme for weeks probably. Considering spring training's happening this weekend and nothing will get done, so I have at least a few more weeks. But yeah. But yeah, no, it's not bad. You know what I mean? Like I feel progress is happening. I feel proud of the work that I've done. So that's a good thing, right? I'm listening to the Yankee game on the radio. I have it on the TV. So it's cool. Like it's I'm passing the time and it's all right.
You are quickly, rapidly becoming a 38-year-old dad, even though you have no kids.
Or 38. But yes, close. Close to it. Maybe at 38, I will be a 38-year-old dad.
It's maybe. Possible. I had a pretty low-key weekend. For the first time in like a month, I was at my house for the weekend, which was nice. I did go to a bar on Saturday night to watch the UFC fight. I don't think you watched it, correct?
No, I actually completely forgot about it.
Yeah, I mean, I
not really a big UFC guy.
Nor am I. I was reminded, but my friends wanted to go. It was $10 to get into the bar, and they were showing the fight, so I figured why not. But what we did not account for is that we selected an Irish bar to go to.
Oh, that's a McGregor bar.
McGregor was fighting, and they were getting rowdy. There was anywhere from pretty sure they were under 21-year-olds all the way to like 50-year-olds. All Irishmen, all ready to throw down because they had so much testosterone from watching these UFC fights. And we sort of had an escape plan. We were like, if McGregor loses this thing, we need to get the hell out of here because someone is going to get their ass kicked. And sure enough, it was getting pretty rowdy towards the end of the night. Everyone was drunk. Everyone was just getting a little too overconfident with the fact that they thought they could fight like those fighters. But I actually have to admit, it was kind of a fun night of fights.
Yeah, I again didn't see any of it. I was looking for the recap and like a it's like boxing, I guess. You can never get a video of it until a few days later.
Yeah.
But I guess he got his ass kicked, right? Or he got worked over after the first round. I heard a whole lot about it and I watched some videos about it because what I did see was like the pre-match just going at it.
He's a cocky bastard.
They were talking a bunch of shit, so
yeah, UFC is one of those things that I think it needs a star to really get the sport going. And it seems like anytime someone starts to build some momentum, they lose a fight. I mean, Ronda Rousey lost a few months ago. McGregor loses this fight, which he wasn't even supposed to be fighting this fight. This was like a fill-in fight. It wasn't for a belt or anything.
Yeah, this guy took the fight. This guy Diaz took the fight on like 10 days notice or something.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't know how long it was, but the guy who
it was short, like 10 days. It was something short like that.
I don't even remember the other guy's name. Alador or something like that was supposed to fight and he got injured. So, yeah, interesting night all around. But do also want to mention that we are 4 days away from spring training. You pumped?
I'm very excited. Getting my checklist checked off of things we got to bring and things we got to do, and yeah, so I'm getting ready. And Nathan Eovaldi gets to throw on Thursday. You're not going to be there yet for that game, but I'll be able to see Mr. Nathan Eovaldi throw for the first time this spring. So that's exciting.
So you know how Clemens used to rub himself in Icy Hot before a game? Yep. I imagine you rubbing yourself in Icy Hot before you go and watch Eovaldi pitch on Thursday.
I will.
Sensual with it.
Yeah, it's already packed. Yeah, yeah. No, so I'm excited about it. This is I saw Eovaldi start last year too. He pitched at Old Timers Day. So you know, Eovaldi and I are kind of like kindred spirits. He does well when I'm there, and he I think is going to have a phenomenal season. And this is just the start of it. So I'm excited to be there for the beginning.
We should find out what the odds of him winning the Cy Young Award are, and you need to put some money on that.
Okay.
You need to put your money
I'm all
in your
over
office.
That. Okay, I'm good with it.
While we're down there, as we've been saying, we're going to be doing daily podcasts. We're going to be periscoping. We're going to try and get some fan interviews. If we can weasel our way in to get any media or player interviews, we will definitely do that. So keep an eye out for podcasts. We're probably going to be posting them daily while we're down there. So make sure you check your iTunes feed or SoundCloud feed or however you listen to the podcast. Make sure to check that over the weekend to hear what's going on down in Tampa. Also, you finally got the Yankees Forum off the ground. Good job. It's looking pretty good.
This is the fourth time, I think, that we've gotten the Forum off the ground.
No, but it's actually working this time.
Yeah, no, it's working. And so now we just need people to go to it. I know all of you, everybody listening, you know, your normal conversations about the Yankees are either on Facebook or Twitter or wherever your social media is. But if you go to the Yankees Forum, there can be longer, more in-depth conversations with Yankee fans, and you could come back to them. It's just a much better place to have a sports conversation, in my opinion. So we're doing this. We're going to do, you know, we're going to have open feeds during the games. We're going to do Yankees Chat is going to be on the forums as well. We're going to start doing a lot more stuff on the forums, so that way people can interact with the writers. We can interact with each other and kind of get to know each other on a more of a Yankees fan basis. But yeah, so definitely check it out. Sign up for it. It's free. And just start chiming in. Or if you have something you want to talk about, start a new topic. You know, maybe it'd be a good idea to do some mailbags from there too.
Absolutely. And I think you touched on it, but during games is going to be crucial because you only have 140 characters on Twitter to complain about Girardi's bullpen use, but you have unlimited characters on the forum to complain
about. Plus, it's just so hard to follow conversations on Twitter sometimes. I mean, it's just you're only talking with one person at a time, whereas in a forum, you're talking to it's more of a forum. That's why it's called that. But you're talking to more people at one time, and you can get a lot more opinions on stuff. So.
Yeah, it's definitely should be popular during the season, and it's not like we're gonna not be on Twitter anymore. We're just gonna be doing both, so multitasking. I'll need two computers open at the same time.
There you go.
Last bit of site updates is that to check out the fan shop, and it was a big hit last year, but we will be doing the A-Bomb shirt giveaway again every time A-Rod hits a home run. He hit a home run in his first swing of spring training. So on this pace, you're going to be giving away about 10,000 t-shirts this year. How are you feeling about that?
Yeah, I'm projecting, what did he hit, 32 last year? Was it 30?
Something like that.
30-ish. I think he's going to be about the same. So I predict him.
Which would be a phenomenal season. Yeah. If they can get the same production out of A-Rod, I think the Yankees will sign up for that right now.
I just don't see how he – I mean, I know he was super hot occasionally, and he got into some just big home run streaks. But I could see him – if he could stay healthy, and obviously there's a big
– That's a huge if.
Emphasis. Well, there's also a big emphasis on keeping him healthy and you know, making sure that they're managing his time a little bit better. So
right.
I think they're going to be – they're more wary of that, obviously.
So when I was – I wrote the transformation of Alex Rodriguez. That was my featured column last week. If you have not already read that, give it a look. Sort of talked about his last year and a half of A-Rod's life and what a crazy transformation he's done. As you know, I say the A-Rodicence. So,
right.
But I was looking at his game law or his games played, and he played like 154 games last year, which blows the number that we all projected for him out of the water. We thought he'd be around like 110, 120. But he did get a little tired towards the end of the year. So I think they will ideally have him in like the 140 to 145 range.
Yeah, and I've you know, just listening to the game and to the games last week and some of the guys talking about this, I think, you know, one of the big reasons or one of the big things that I think they're going to be sitting him against like tough righties that come in. And, you know, one of the big decisions that Girardi's going to have to make is if A-Rod's going well and he's like extremely hot, he may have to sit him in the middle of a hot streak like that, because you can't just keep playing him game after game after game. Girardi actually has to be conscious of what's going to happen in August and September with A-Rod and make the hard decision of sitting him. So I'm already preparing myself to not get too angry with Girardi about sitting A-Rod in the middle of a hot streak, because I'm setting my expectations to a level where I know it's going to happen, and I kind of agree with it. So if you know he's in the middle of a hot streak and you know, a power-throwing right-handed pitcher that comes in who's real hot and is pitching well, they may sit him against that guy.
Yeah, I get more mad at Girardi when you have like, do you remember when Slade Heathcott had that mammoth game in Tampa last year, and then he sat for the next week? I get more mad about stuff
like
that.
Was it Tampa or Minnesota? Yeah, it was
Tampa.
Two,
he had the walk-off homer against Tampa.
Yeah.
And both Gardner and Ellsbury were banged up, so they were looking for guys to play the outfield. And it's like, well, why don't you let Heathcott get in there? And he's riding high right now. See if he can, you know, continue this momentum. But he didn't sniff the field for another week. I get more mad about that stuff.
Well, I know, but, you know, during the season when this happens and A-Rod's all, you know, he's just stroking the ball very well, and then Girardi sits him on the next day after a 4-for-5, you know we're going to be crying about that. But
yes,
these are the things that he's going to have to do to get him that regular rest that he's going to need. So this is uncharted territory for everybody. So I'll be honest. This guy's a 40-year-old man who hit 30-plus home runs and hopes to do it again. So this is all just – you know, kind of going by the feel. And Girardi and A-Rod obviously have to have very good communication of how his body's feeling on a daily basis. These are communications that are going to have to happen all the time, conversations. So, you know, he's going to have to make some hard decisions with him occasionally.
So this was just a very long way of saying to retweet the A-bomb graphic every time A-Rod hits a home run so you can enter your chance to win a free t-shirt and also check out the fan shop.
And we have like 6 new designs coming out probably in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Yes.
I know all of the guys in Bronx Pinstripes have seen them. I've been kind of testing the waters with these guys. And most of them, if not all of them, have been a good hit. So I'm excited to release a lot of them. I'm definitely putting in some throwback 90s, 20th anniversary, 96 t-shirts that are going to be really cool. So check it out.
Yep. Also one about Old Yankee Stadium, and then one about the big three-headed monster out of the bullpen. So a lot of good stuff. Did you by chance catch the Players Tribune article from CC today?
I did. I read it this afternoon.
So if you have not checked it out, give it a read. It's called My Toughest Out, and CC talks about sort of realizing that he had problems with alcohol and he needed help. It was actually a very good read. You could tell it was something that CC has been battling with for a while. But he even said, you know, I would say I had a problem, but I didn't actually believe it. So he would, you know, his wife would confront him, and he would say, yes, I know I need help. I have a problem. But in the back of his mind, he was saying he had it under control. And I'm sure any alcoholic or somebody battling with drugs or alcohol will tell you that they think they can manage it, but they really can't. So CC was going through all that. So definitely give it a read. It's a very good emotional read. But one takeaway I had from it was that he said he's been battling this since 2012, which is a long time. It means he's been pitching. He pitched 3 full seasons where he was spending entire road trips getting wasted in his hotel room. And interestingly enough, 2012 is the last year he had an ERA under 4. So I know he's had injuries elsewhere with his knees and everything, but perhaps the alcohol is a reason why he's been so unhealthy and struggled as a pitcher.
I mean, it absolutely has to have something to do with it. You know, this is something, and go back and read the article. Absolutely read this article because it's extremely good. And like Andrew was saying, it's very personal. And he really goes into depth. I mean, I was expecting kind of a fluff article, in all honesty. And when I started reading it, I was very surprised on how just open and honest he was being about the whole situation. And, I mean, he was taking us back to his Cleveland days and how he was at that time the youngest player, the youngest pitcher in Major League Baseball, which I wasn't aware of. And, you know, he was extremely shy, and he was he couldn't even drink with the guys out at, you know, after a game or something because he wasn't of age. But he started drinking more to kind of come out of his shell that year and started just kind of putting on a personality with the alcohol. It was helping him be more of that fun-loving guy that he thought he wanted to be or that he thought he needed it. And I think that was like the very beginning of him doing this. So it's sad. It's a sad kind of path of this because, you know, he mentions in the article that he feels like he grew up in Major League Baseball. And why wouldn't you? I mean, if you're there at 20 years old, and what is he now, 35, 34, 35? 30. So he's been there for, you know, a very large part of his life. Yeah. You know, his entire career, but his entire adult life, he's been in baseball. So
think about how much you changed between the age of 20 and 30.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean,
and he was a 100 millionaire that whole time. So,
To me, the biggest transformation of my life really has been from 30 on, because I don't know, there was just a kind of an end of a phase for me, and moving on to, you know, you get to 30, you feel like you're considered an adult, you got to start doing things differently. But for me, it was kind of a different path at that point. But for CeCe, the way that he really goes into it, I got to give him a lot of credit for coming out with this. And, you know, obviously he even talks about the timing of it and how he says that, yeah, you know,
I love that part. That
me too, because part. He gives his reasonings and not that anybody should question his reasonings, because you're not in that situation. You have no idea what's going on. And who are any of us to question the reasonings of a man who says he has a problem with alcohol?
We recorded an episode as soon as that news broke. And we questioned the timing.
The timing was weird. It was strange.
Very weird. And
I expected something else to happen. I expected another kind of bomb to drop.
We thought it was going to be some situation that comes out later, which sort of forced his hand to go to rehab. Right. And by all accounts, we were wrong on that. And it just seems that he had a realization that his life was spiraling, and he was getting out of control. And he talked about how he knew the playoffs were starting and pitching was so important, and he had actually been pitching pretty well, and he did not want to let his team down, but at the same time, his health and his family was more important, which obviously, and he was nervous going into Girardi's office, but Girardi and the Yankees supported him. So yeah, that was a great part of the article.
You know, and he at the end of it, he just starts talking about how, you know, Bob Welch is a guy. If I don't know if many of you know who Bob Welch is, he was a guy that pitched in the 80s and the 90s. He was a guy that I probably had 20 of his baseball cards. I remember Bob Welch very well. He pitched with the Oakland Athletics and then I think the Dodgers as well. But he was a guy that apparently, I didn't know this part of it, but he had battled these alcohol issues as well early in his career, went to rehab, overcame them, and became a better pitcher, a better man, just stronger for it. And from what CeCe was talking about, was he really took a lot from the Bob Welch story, and he was, you know, kind of a mentor in this situation for him. I don't know personally, but just from the book, he read the book, and you know, so he's seen a guy in his situation to, you know, do, you know, overcome this and come out for the better. And you know, from what CeCe's saying, that he feels better than he ever has, than he has remembered, and that he's more focused going into this.
Got to be a mental training weight off of his shoulders.
Oh God, yeah, absolutely.
So here's the question. Anyone saying CeCe, you know, Cy Young CeCe is back, is having delusions of grandeur, because that's not going to happen. He's older. He's got miles on him. So he's not going to be 2009 CeCe ever again. But can he be second half 2015 CeCe for an entire season? And I was actually surprised when I looked up these stats. CeCe's second half of the year last year, 12 starts, 3.63 ERA, 67 innings pitched, which is 6 innings a start, which you know how much I love that 6 innings a start. That's what I want Evaldi to get to. And a 1-to-1 hit to innings ratio. That's actually a pretty solid starter if you're plugging him in at the number 4 or number 5 starter. So do you think CeCe can do that for an entire season?
This is exactly what we were waiting for all year. We talked about this from the, you know, as soon as CeCe started these struggles, you and I have been talking about, when is CeCe going to become the old Andy Pettit, like the older Andy Pettit, the aged Andy Pettit, where Andy Pettit lost the velocity on his fastball, but he knew how to pitch around that. He could spot his pitches and just pitch effectively later in his career. And we've been waiting for that CeCe to show up. You know, even working with Pettit and you're literally like working with that same guy, you can be that type of player. And it seemed like at the end of the last year that he had absolutely figured that out. He pitched much better. The knee brace had a lot to do with it from everything we've heard, but he feels more comfortable. He was getting, you know, he was getting deeper into the games, like you were saying, 6 innings. And he, you know, like we saw in the beginning of the year and into the last year, when that 5th inning rolled around, it was the end of CeCe. But second half of last year,
it was batting practice. It was insane.
He was much better. Yeah, he progressed. He overcame that third round, you know, the third time through the lineup,
yep,
where it's just batting practice, like you're saying. He kind of overcame that and really dialed something different. So, you know, just by looking at what he did second half last year, obviously not in the best mental state, overcoming his own personal issues and not having that anymore, you know, the pitching part of it was pretty good. So if he could come in with a clear mind, a healthy body, and then the knowing and confidence that he did that not at 100%, who's to say that he can't do that?
I totally agree. I'm still a little worried about the knee. And I'm worried that he's just his body. I mean, think about all the innings he threw from 2004 through 2012.
Yeah,
I
that, mean, that one was, year in Milwaukee, yeah, they just rode him.
And that was why that's why Yankee fans and everybody loves CC, is because he is a team first guy. He'll take the ball whenever he is given the ball, and he'll go out on 3 days rest and he'll gut it out. But that adds up on somebody. So he's got a lot of miles on him, and he's not been in the best shape his entire life, plus alcoholism for the last 3 years. So there's just a lot of stuff that is factoring into his health. So I'm a little worried about his health, but I actually do think he figured out, like you said, how to pitch in the second half of last year. So if he can stay healthy, again, another big if for this team. Everybody has an if with health. But if he can stay healthy, I think he can put up those kind of stats again.
Yeah, I mean, again, there's nothing. It seems like something clicked in the way that he realized how to pitch. And to me, that's the biggest thing that he could take forward. If everything else is better, you know, the body feels better, the knee brace is working, he's obviously got the alcohol problem behind him, and he's a better person, a better mentally, and he's just, you know, has a clearer head, then all of those things can only lead to better results on the field. So, I'd say I'm more optimistic for, you know, as of late, I'm more optimistic for what CC's going to do.
And this is, I'm 99.9% sure CC's last year with the Yankees, because he's on the books for $25 million this year, and then he's got a vesting option with a $5 million buyout. So the Yankees are not going to pay him $25 million next year. They're going to buy him out for $5 million. Right. You know, maybe he still wants to pitch, and he signs back with the team for a third of that price. But he's most likely, this is his last year under this contract with the Yankees. So, you know, let's see if he can go out on top. All right. Some more news over the last week, and this happened the day after we recorded, but Aroldis Chapman is suspended for 30 games, and he will not appeal, which at first surprised me, because 2 days before the suspension, he said he's going to appeal no matter what, and then he doesn't appeal. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized he was probably speaking with MLB and Manfred, and they were going to give him 45-plus games. And then they said, but if you don't appeal, we'll bring it down to 30. So he said, fine. So it was a negotiation. He did not want more than 46 games, more than 45 games, because that would have delayed his free agency. So that's got to be what happened.
I totally agree that there was definitely some kind of a negotiation behind the scenes. And that's what happened, because if he was 45 games, as a Yankee fan, you're looking at that, you're like, oh, man. 45 games, another 15 games for another year. I could probably deal with that.
Yeah,
it's a nice little trade-off. But you know, obviously there was some kind of a negotiation behind the scenes, and you're right. He's not going to delay the free agency, because that's taking a hell of a lot of money out of his pocket.
It's about his worst case scenario for the Yankees. I'm not saying it's bad. I mean,
it's still not bad. It's still not that bad.
Not the worst thing in the world, but it's the worst pretty much that from a Yankees fan perspective, because like we said, it's a lot of games, but not enough to delay free agency. But one thing I think that you have to actually give credit to is that Manfred came down hard. We saw how much the NFL botched everything with the Ray Rice and on down the list. So good for you. Got to give Manfred props for coming down hard and putting his foot down. We're not going to tolerate this, even though no charges were pressed. You got to set a precedent, and it seems like he did.
He's saying there was a situation that was not good. There was a situation that was involved you and a woman, and there was some kind of a domestic dispute, and it went too far. And you're right. There were no charges filed. There was no arrests or anything like that. But by saying, hey, no arrests, no charges filed, get you 30 games, well, let's see what happens when you do something wrong. I mean, yeah. We all know that there's a pending case against Jose Reyes right now that's still in the courts. I mean, it's not even at Major League Baseball, because it's still got to go through the court system. But you're right. I got no problem with it because I'm totally obviously opposed to everything that happened. You know, whether it wasn't that big of a deal as he says or it was, I wasn't there. I'm not one to speak on that, but I'm glad that he came down around this topic because it's a topic that has obviously been a big hot button in sports and in society lately, and it's just something that it should be completely non-tolerated.
So that's all. Let's put that aside for a second, talk about on field.
Yep.
So Chapman's suspended for the month of April. The Yankees are going to be with just Betances and Miller plus the rest of the bullpen guys. But those two guys, which we had last year, I'm assuming Miller will be the closer. Eighth inning will go to Betances for the time being. Again, we said it's not the worst case scenario for the Yankees. We know that their bullpen is still going to be good. And it kind of, the more success they have in April, you're adding on a piece come May. And I think that it will be kind of an exciting thing to look forward to.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if you see Jason Shreve back in that seventh inning, like he really took hold of that position early in the season last year. He's a guy that, you know, we think that he completely just fell off because he was, you know, pitched more innings and he just got overly tired and just worked. And I think, you know, at that point he started doing either. I heard an interview with him about, you know, with Meredith Marakovic, and he was talking about just the things, you know, what are you focused on? What are you coming into 2016 looking at? And one of his big things was, you know, just to rely on my body and rely on the things that I know how to do and not look at the glove and pitch to a spot, but just throw and just kind of do the mindless things that he's trained to do. And apparently last year at the end of the season, he was just thinking too much. And I think a lot of that comes from fatigue and you're trying to spot pitches too much because, you know, you don't feel as great as you do normally. So you're trying to do extra things. And the fact that he would be a seventh inning guy, you know, I think in the first month of the season and then kind of slowing down and just filling in as a middle relief guy when Chapman comes back, I think will only bode well for him later in the season.
And it gives a lot of guys a chance to audition in the seventh inning, which will have a little bit more pressure, a little bit more visibility, more opportunity because starters were more likely to be out of the game. So you got guys like Shreve, Rumbelo, Lindgren, Pazos, whoever else they have on the roster.
Nick Goody. There's a lot of guys
that are vying for the last couple spots in the bullpen. This is a chance, while Chapman's not on the team, to have an audition in the seventh inning. So guys can really set themselves apart in that time.
We may not see as much of a Scranton bust this year. I kind of hope we don't. We may have more of a
Scranton bust for the last pitcher on the roster, where every day they were shipping them out and shipping somebody new in.
Yeah, I think there may be some guys in there that are not worthy of just going on and off the roster. I feel like even, you know, beyond when Chapman comes back, we obviously have 7, 8, 9 locked down. But I mean, if you're looking at the names that are possibilities before that, I mean, there's some good names in there. There's some guys that I think could be very effective and they can you know, earn a permanent spot on this team. So I think I'm really very, very, very looking forward to this bullpen and how they can progress through the season.
And those guys earned valuable Greyhound miles last year.
No doubt.
They can cash in to exotic vacations from New York to back to Scranton, maybe to Albany. I know it goes to Boston.
So, Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Oh, Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's beautiful. And like you go in like mid-February, it's beautiful.
Cincinnati, no doubt.
No, you don't want to mess with the Midwest. All right. So do you have anything else on the Chapman stuff before we go to the next topic?
No, I think we've pretty much covered it. May 4th, right, early May is when we'll see him.
Yeah. So speaking of the roster, Girardi had a quote about the 25th man on the roster. I'm going to read that. You have to take someone who can play third. You really have to see how this plays out. You have guys like Donovan Solano and a Castro and a Ronald Torres and a Jonathan Diaz who have played all over. So he's talking about the third base position, which they're going to use as the last roster spot for the backup third base. And I've learned I can't read on this podcast. I can speak to you and I can talk about whatever, But as soon as I have to read the words in front of my face, I just can't do it. It's like I could never read out loud when
so be rest assured, everything we do is completely off the cuff. Nothing is scripted.
Like,
because we can't read.
did you have that same thing where it's like in school you were just begging the teacher not to call on you to read out loud because I just couldn't do it?
No, it was not that reason. It was because I probably didn't read what she's going to ask me about. That was the reason, because I didn't know.
No, you know, but praying. Like even if you were, this was like, you know, probably like seventh grade or sixth grade or whatever, and you were just sort of reading the chapters and you'd go around the room.
Yeah, of course. You don't want to be that guy.
I'd always be following. It's like, how long is my paragraph going to be? I was counting down. It's like, oh, yes, I have a short paragraph, or you get screwed with the long
paragraph. Yeah. No, exactly the same.
Yeah. All right. So the Girardi quote was talking about the third base backup spot. He mentioned Solano, Castro, who obviously will be the second baseman, but backup third base, Torres, Diaz, and Ref Snyder was also in there. He was implied. But they're going to use the last roster spot as the super utility guy. And we have mentioned, can Ref Snyder prove he can be that super utility guy? He made a really nice play over the weekend playing third base, showed his athleticism. So he's vying for it. But can he convince management to give him that spot?
That's the biggest question. Can he convince people that he is that guy? They did not give him the keys to second base last year because they didn't think he was far along enough to play second base every day or even platoon with one Steven Drew, which is the last time I'm mentioning his name. But so that's a big question mark is how management feels about Rob Refsnyder. But I feel like there's been kind of a shift and a changing of tune when we're talking about Ref Snyder, because last year we were talking about how there's possibly some kind of an issue, a clubhouse issue. We never saw it. We were always kind of looking for it, but it never really showed itself when he was on the major league roster, and we never really saw anything.
Francesa dropped that bomb on one of his radio shows.
But we never really saw anything. So I'm always looking for that, because I'm looking for the reason why he's not on the team. I want to know the specific reason, because to me it's not the fact that he can't play second base, because when he came up and played second base, played a damn good second base. So you're seeing him now playing third base. He says, you know, when they're interviewing him after the game, he said it feels extremely comfortable to me. That and you know, he just needs to get more reps, and he'll play wherever they say. He said that multiple times. I will play wherever Joe wants me. And that should be music to Joe's ears, because Joe needs to right now play him at third base more often, play him at second base, play him in right field, give him some time in the outfield where we know he's played before, so that you can see it with your own two eyes. I know that there's so much doubt around him playing the field for whatever reason, but please give him the opportunity to do it, because all he's done is proved everybody in the Yankees organization wrong on the major league level and how he can defend playing at any position.
But you know what they're going to do. They're going to opt for the defense, for the guy who can just pick it, and they don't care about offense. I mean, Solano, Torres, Diaz, these are all journeyman guys. Two of them are 28 or older. The other one's 23, but he's bounced around a bit. These guys are boring. You know what's going to happen. They're going to bat ninth. They're going to go 0-for-4. Maybe if we're lucky, they'll put down a bunt or get hit by a pitch and they actually do something productive. But they're not going to be productive other than just not making errors. Where we see Ref Snyder, we see his potential at the plate. He can make an impact offensively. He seems to be able to field, at least to an average level. I don't know why they don't give him a shot. It's got to be because of the options with AAA, right? They know they can move him up and down. They don't need to make a decision with him right now. They can just cut one of these guys and not care about it. So, I mean, that's the only thing I can think of.
Well, I think that's part of it. But I think also, if you look around, there's really no Brendan Ryan on this team right now. There's no guy that Joe can bring in as a defensive replacement late in the game, because you know he loves doing that. He loves bringing in the sure-handed defensive guy to play a position. But
they already have guys who can – Didi's a great fielder.
That's my point.
Headley should be a good fielder. Teixeira's great, obviously. Castro's good. They have backup outfielders, so in the ninth inning they can take Beltran out because he's on crutches, and they can put, you know, Hicks out there to play right field. So they already have these guys. base.
This is more that's my point. My point more to this to what you're saying is that he shouldn't have to really to make his decision based on that type of situation where he's got to bring in a guy for a late inning defensive purposes or whatever. Can we talk about the guy that's going to come in and play for the day off at different positions? Because that guy, I want to be able to hit the ball too. You know, when we look at the roster and what happened last year with the offense and how it completely sputtered, and we had too many damn lefties in a row, and if we're facing a lefty, we don't score at all. We just don't score. And you have a guy with a right-handed bat who's proved that he can play in the major leagues, hit the ball, and play a, like you're saying, average enough, average to above-average defense. Play the guy, man. That's the guy that should win the job, the guy that earns the job, not the guy that just knows how to glove a ball. I can't stand that. And I know that there's a whole big stat about run prevention. And I know these guys are looking at it. I know Girardi looks at run prevention, and that's one of the big reasons he likes those defensive-minded backup infielders.
And Ref Snyder can also pinch hit late in a game if you have a tough, you know, say you got pinch a run. Tough lefty.
He's a great base stealer, too.
You got a tough lefty on the mound, and Didi's coming up. And you're down a run, and you got a guy in scoring position. It's like, yes, we like Didi, but that's not the best situation for him. You probably have a better shot by pinch hitting Ref Snyder. He has a better shot against him. But you have confidence that he could actually have a good at-bat against a guy like that. Whereas they didn't have that last year. The last few roster spots were filled with guys that couldn't even hit in college, Correct. Never mind the major leagues. So
that's what he does. He just adds so much more flexibility. And like I understand what everybody's saying. I want that glove. I want the glove as the backup. But let's get something straight. Rob Refsnyder has not proven that he's a bad defensive anything yet in the major leagues. He hasn't shown that. So why am I to say that he's not going to play good defense continuing on?
But like you just said, he's not going to be the defensive replacement. He's going to be the guy, the utility guy.
But if he pinch hits in the eighth inning, he's going to he's going to have to go out for the ninth to defend.
He can play. He can play. We know he can play second base. So if Didi gets pinch hit for, you could always move Castro over to shortstop, who was a shortstop his entire career, and you put Ref Snyder at second base. There is options with the roster they have. Look at what Joe Maddon did with the Cubs last year. He moved guys around almost uncomfortably, and they won 98 games. So it can be done. It doesn't have to be by the book, cross your T's and dot your I's for every game. You can get creative.
One of the biggest reasons I love Joe Maddon is because he realizes that baseball players are baseball players. They can play at different positions. I mean, look at the shifting that's going on right now. Guys who play shortstop have to know how to play second base. Guys who play third have to know how to play shortstop. Because in, I don't know, 1 out of 5, 1 out of 6, 1 out of 8, whatever the hell it is, however many times they shift, they're doing it a hell of a lot more often these days.
Right.
Those guys are going to be out of position in the field. They have to know how to play multiple positions. So you get a guy like Ref Snyder who's athletic, and I know if you listen to this podcast, you've heard me talk about his athleticism and how much I love it and how much it's an asset to the Yankees and not a hindrance, but he could play multiple positions. And shifting, so you have a guy who's playing second base, and you have the shift on for a left-handed batter, so now Ref Snyder's in basically short right field. Oh, look at that. Ref Snyder knows how to play right field. He played it all through college. It's a guy that's absolutely valuable on this roster.
Versatility and athleticism is the trend in baseball today. And they can't keep going in the opposite direction. They need to start embracing the change. All right. More roster.
How many rants are we going to go on Ref Snyder? This is going to be That was probably like our 15th rant on Ref Snyder. It's gonna continue, especially if he makes this team.
That was one of our better ones.
Yeah, that was fun.
Backup catcher. We know the Kraken, Gary Sanchez, was sort of the leader in the clubhouse going into the season to win the backup job. Cashman praised the pop off of his bat, and you kind of got excited about Sanchez. But Romine's the one who's actually been hitting so far in spring, and I know it's early. But Romine has major league experience. Sanchez doesn't really. He got a call up last year. But Romine has some experience. He's caught a lot of these pitchers. And he doesn't have any more AAA options. And Sanchez obviously does. So there is a very real possibility that Romine, to start the season, gets the backup job and not Gary Sanchez, which is what we thought.
See, now I'm going to completely change course on this position, because to me, the backup catcher needs to be able to field the ball and catch the ball, receive the ball, know the pitchers better than anybody on the field as far as defensive wise. This guy needs to know the pitching staff. He needs to be able to come in and control a game, call pitchers, obviously, keep the runners at bay on the base path. Like, this is an extremely important position defensively,
Jose
more
Molina.
Than offensively.
Jose Molina couldn't run or hit, but he was a fantastic backup catcher.
So the fact that Austin Romine, you know, look, his biggest knock was that he had no offensive abilities. I mean, we've seen Romine before. We've seen Romine. He's been in the organization for a long time. We know what he is defensively. He's a terrific defensive catcher. And from all accounts, everything I've heard from the offseason, he's head over heels better than he has been in the past. So this guy is not only progressing defensively, even after he was a very good defensive catcher to start with, but the fact that he really put a lot of time in on his offense, and he knows that. You know, if you're listening to any of these interviews, these in-game interviews that they're doing in spring training, they were talking to Romine, and he's saying, look, I know what my job is. I know that for me to make this team, I have to hit the ball. He's like, I know I can play defense. They know I can play defense. I got to prove that I can hit the ball. And that's his biggest thing. He is, I think he's got two or three doubles. He's, you know, he's hitting for average right now. He's having a very good spring so far. Granted, it's been a week. He's had a very good first week at the plate.
But he also did last year, if you remember. Don't you remember, and this just, I just remembered this. We were talking about John Ryan Murphy and Sanchez was actually hitting better in the early spring training, because I think guys just are working on fastballs at this point. And he's sitting fastball. He's squaring it up. I really do think this happened last year as well. But back to your point about how you were changing tunes on the backup catcher position. Comparing Ref Snyder to Sanchez is apples to oranges, because Sanchez is only 23. He just turned 23 years old, and he's a backup catcher who actually projects could be their starting catcher as soon as 2017, maybe 2018. So they're not going to mess around with him. They can mess around a little bit more with Ref Snyder at this point. So I think that comparison, as you said, is totally different. So people need to understand that.
Yeah, and I'm not comparing them in any way. I'm just talking about the fact that the backup position needs to be more of a defender as a catcher. Yeah, the backup catcher needs to be a better defender than I mean, how many guys do you see around Major League Baseball that are winning the backup catching position who can hit 300? You just don't see it. Like, Cervelli was like the only guy. He was one of a rare breed where he was a backup catcher for the Yankees and could hit. And you just don't see that guy very often.
Posada, and he quickly took Girardi's job. Well,
exactly. Usually they're starting catchers. That's exactly right. And what if Cervelli did? He became a starting catcher. So those guys become starting catchers very fast. But yeah, so I do believe right now, as we're standing, that Romine has the edge in that. And you know, Girardi is a catcher himself who also was a defensive catcher, couldn't hit that well, but he was more of a defensive catcher than an offensive catcher, is going to lean towards those guys because that's his type of guy. And he wants that catcher in the back, backing up McCann as a guy that can handle the pitching staff, that is familiar with the pitching staff, and can do well late in game. So that's I think that because of the option situation that Romine doesn't have any, right now I'm going to say that Romine's going to be the backup catcher.
That may very well be, but I think Sanchez at some point in the season will be the backup catcher. They released Romine last year and no one claimed him, and he went back to Scranton. So that could still happen again. I think Sanchez is the real deal. And I don't think Romine can hit the major league level. We've seen it for two seasons now. He hasn't been able to hit at the major league level in a short sample as a backup catcher, but still. I really do think Sanchez is the real deal. So I'm looking forward to seeing him this year. So you were watching the game on Sunday. Tanaka pitched, and I believe you had a quote or something that you wanted to mention from him.
Yeah, so again, I was actually putting flooring down, and I was listening to John and Susan. And by the way, they just got, if you haven't seen, they just got renewed. And I know a lot of people are completely shitting on them, but I love them. Yeah, I absolutely love them. To me, baseball is like an old-time game. You know, like, I like corny old-school type of guys around the game of baseball. And to me, Well, one, I grew up with John Sterling, and I know a lot of some people aren't very favorable toward Michael Kay, but I grew up to John Sterling and Michael Kay on 770, listening to them when I wasn't, you know, when I was a kid, not able to go watch TV. We didn't have cable at that point. I was listening to them on my radio, and so that's how I grew up with John Sterling. I love his commentary. I love the fact that him and Susan sometimes don't know who a guy is.
Yeah, I mean,
and they just make stuff up.
It's a beautiful relationship that they have. The sexual tension is off the charts. And yes, you do have to check your phone to make sure something actually did happen, because sometimes they get it wrong. But it's entertaining, and I don't want it any different.
Yeah, I love it. So, okay, anyway. So I was listening to the game, and I think it was the Phillies broadcast was on television. The Yankees didn't have a broadcast on Sunday, so there was like a delay of like 3 minutes. So it was perfect. So I could listen to the game, and if anything happened, anything of note, I would get up and watch it. It was actually pretty perfect. But Tanaka, they interviewed Tanaka. I think it was Sweeney Marty actually interviewed Tanaka, and then third hand kind of gave the information to Susan Waldman. But anyway. What the information was to me was pretty telling. Sweeney asked Tanaka about how he felt. He said he felt very good through the two innings he pitched, and then there was a question in there that was very telling to me about last year. Sweeney asked Tanaka asked him if he could regain his 2014 form, and we all know. We saw a different Tanaka in 2014 than we did in 15. And, you know, everybody thinking about the injury that occurred, obviously that had to play into some, you know, the league has seen him. So what was the actual reason why he didn't have the same success he did? And Tanaka said that he believes that he could regain that form. He said, I could regain that form because my elbow feels a lot better, feels better this year. And, you know, Andrew, you and I talked about this all last year about like, why he was injured, like what was going on, what the injuries were. And there was never any talk about his elbow being discomfort. We know the forearm or something. And, you know, like the pinky bone is connected to the hand bone is connected to the forearm is connected
to
the elbow.
They basically would list everything except his elbow as injured.
So he just said this week that my elbow was bothering me last year. And he said that my elbow feels completely healthy, and that we are going that he believes that he can regain that form. So, look, we know he got the bone spurs out. Apparently, that wasn't an issue, but that's what we've been told.
He's had that
to
since
me.
Japan.
To me, it's an issue. Yeah, it's an issue. He's felt discomfort in his arm, just in general. His elbow, obviously, he made the comment saying that his elbow feels much better. To me, I'm going to dive into these comments and just dissect the living shit out of them. But basically, his arm to me feels as good as it did in 2014, or at least his elbow does. So your elbow has a lot to do with the way you throw the ball, the way that you, the amount of action that's on the type of the breaking stuff that you throw, and how hard you can throw and how long you can throw. So I'm excited about that. That's very, very good news. Tanaka's elbow is finally 100%, and you heard it here first.
So you ready? I'm going to go sports radio caller on you. So I fell skiing last winter, and I fell right onto my elbow, and it was bruised, it hurt, and then all of a sudden, like 3 weeks later, I was feeling around on my elbow, and I can actually feel a chip in my bone. So I'm assuming I have some sort of chip bone spurs, something floating around in my left elbow. And it doesn't always hurt, but sometimes it'll get sore. If I lean on it weird, it'll get sore. So there had to have been some discomfort there. There just had to have been if he had bone spurs in his elbow. So maybe his elbow, like you said, is 100% better, and that might be fantastic news for the Yankees. That might be the best news to come out of spring so far.
I agree, and I think nobody's really covered it. Nobody's really talked about the fact that he said these comments, because to me these comments are extremely telling. And you're talking about you fell and then you're something moving in there. I mean, scar tissue moves like that. There's a lot of things in your elbow. That my elbow is like a disaster.
Well, I looked it up on WebMD, and I need to amputate my arm.
Okay. So yeah, there's a million things that move. Like I feels like there's an entire party of ants in my elbow right now. It's awful. And so there's a million things that can happen. But to me, you're getting bone spurs removed at the end of the year. And then you make these comments. So, yes, I'm going to believe. I'm going to go back and say that, yes, your elbow was not at 100% last year. And that's, you know, we were seeing lower velocity, not as much action on the splitter. You know, we were seeing a number of things that we saw a DL stint. So maybe Tanaka is 100% healthy coming into this year. And we will see 2014 Tanaka from what he's saying.
Let's get into some MLB news, and we do have to preview a couple teams, and then we'll get out of here. So Chase Utley, the vicious slide in the NLDS, which you and I both loved, he is not going to be suspended for that. Mets fans crying all over Twitter. It was beautiful. But I just wanted to mention it because it did really force the hand to institute the quote-unquote Utley slide, or the Utley rule. So you can no longer make contact with a second baseman or a shortstop or anybody turning a double play by sweeping your leg, lunging at them, sliding hard into them, kicking, anything like that. Basically, it's impossible to now break up a double play. Just like we saw Nomar crashing into the catcher, Pete Rose style, you can no longer break up a double play at second base. What is happening to our beloved game, Scott?
So this is one of those rules that I'm very interested to see how it gets enforced, because I could see the umpires loosely enforcing this. And obviously this is all judgment, right? This is something that's judgment. I don't really think it makes that much of a difference, in all honesty. I still think they're going to let people break up the double play. I still think they're going to allow those kind of hard slides.
Well, they don't for catchers.
It's a different scenario to me. It's a run scoring play. It's just a different scenario. This is such a gray area, because first of all, the second baseman, like the catcher fields the ball at the plate in relatively the same position every single time. You got to, when there's a play at second, you got either a second baseman coming at the ball, you got a shortstop coming at the ball. If there's a shift, you got a friggin' third baseman coming at the ball, and you don't know where the angles are, who's doing what. There's no stealing. You know, the runner's not stealing home when a catcher usually. There's a lot more things that are going into this. And unless it's completely blatant, I could see the umpires not saying a damn thing, and we don't see that much of a change. And to me, I feel like that's going to happen, at least in the beginning of the season. They're gonna really just kind of hands off of this thing and let the guys play, unless it's completely obvious, or, you know, it's one of those issues. But I hate it, man. I really do hate it. You're asking me what's happening to our game. It's becoming way too soft. Yeah. The catcher thing I didn't like. I don't like the catcher thing still. I don't like this. Let the guys do what they do. If it's bad and you see it on the field, call it like you see it.
I hate overreaction to one play. The Utley slide was dirty. He should be suspended for that, because that is not within the spirit. I can't think of a better word. That's not within the good competitive nature of the game. Him basically just torpedoing and breaking a guy's leg. But breaking up a double play is part of the game. It always has been. Running into the catcher is part of the game, and it always has been. I hate to see that kind of stuff change when for 100 years and 99% of the time it wasn't an issue. And then MLB or whatever sport we're talking about overreacts to one single play. I hate when that happens, and I feel like that's what they're doing right now.
It's becoming football, where the referees in football have to see like 80 different rule changes, and now they have so many rules they can't even concentrate on what's going on the field, because they have to be so conscious of all these damn rules that are happening that are added to the game that, to me, take away from the game as a spectator, and I can only imagine how much they take away from the game as a player. So this type of thing, it's a common sense thing. It's a feel thing. If you see something as an umpire that's not in the spirit of the game, as you were saying, or whatever, not the old boy baseball rules, then call it out. And that's what's always been done. If something is not right, call it out. And that's what that you can go. You can, with the old rules, that umpire could have still called, you know, they can call Chase Utley out and say that it was a bad slide, that he was going at the shortstop. They could have done that at that time. It was a judgment call. So we're just talking about people and human error at this time.
Yeah. And
I'm just waiting for the strike zone to become robotic because that's where they're going to lose me.
I was going to say that there's so much other stuff, part of baseball, that they need to fix first than stuff like this. But it'll be interesting to see how how umps call it. All right, so let's preview the Diamondbacks. The Yankees play at Arizona May 16th through the 18th. So interleague play goes throughout the entire season now with the Astros moving over. And this is the first interleague series the Yankees have of the season is in mid-May. And the Diamondbacks are projected by Baseball Prospectus to finish third in their division with 78 wins. I think some people are high on them, though, because they got Zach Greinke for $1 trillion and traded the number one overall pick and pretty much their entire farm system for Shelby Miller. Two very, very, very good pitchers. But when you look at it, they're in a division with the Dodgers and the Giants, who on paper are both better than them. And other than Greinke, Miller, and Goldschmidt, I don't think they have a lot of talent on that roster. So I actually think third place is probably where they're going to be.
Yeah, I just, you know, I'm kind of hoping we don't see Greinke. I mean, if we face Shelby Miller, then we'll face Shelby Miller. But I don't know enough about Shelby Miller to be scared of Shelby Miller. Zach Greinke, I know, obviously, is one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball. Shelby Miller, I know, had a very low ERA. His win to loss ratio was skewed because of the Braves being who they were last year. But yeah, there's, you know, Goldschmidt's a stud. That's a guy that's an absolute stud at first base. But you know, there's really nobody on that team that's petrifying for me for that series. So
here's what'll happen: is you and I will preview the Diamondbacks when we go to play them in May, and we'll say just don't let Goldschmidt beat you, and then he'll have 3 home runs and 19 RBIs in the series, because that's what always seems to happen when the Yankees are involved. But you really just can't let Goldschmidt beat you, and I think you can pitch around him and beat that lineup.
You know, it's funny because when we traded for Didi, and even before that, the year before that, it seemed like they had like 3 or 4 shortstop prospects that were just studs. And these guys have not panned out. And the one guy that really has panned out so far is the guy that they got rid of, and the one that we took advantage of, obviously, with Didi. So kudos to Brian Cashman again on that move and getting Didi at a time where, you know, it was, man, I tell you, the more and more I'm talking about Cashman, the more and more I'm talking about this guy striking when the iron is hot. He really has taken advantage of some situations.
Are you referring to the Peter O'Brien for Martin Prado trade?
I mean, that was something. O'Brien was a guy that was, I think, familiar to Yankee fans, or at least the Yankee clubhouse, where he was an offensive power in the minor leagues and just didn't have a position. So Prado was a guy that, I mean, look, let's call this what it is. It's Peter O'Brien for Nathan Eovaldi, right?
Yeah, you can look at it that way.
Yes. Anytime I can bring Nathan Eovaldi back into the conversation.
yeah, I mean that you're right. It was Peter O'Brien for Nathan Eovaldi at the end of the day.
What a great deal. Cashman's a friggin' genius.
I mean, yeah, I can't even talk shit on that one. Peter O'Brien, though, is interesting. Like you said, he has no position, but he had a very good offensive year for the AAA Arizona team, whoever they are.
I was going to say, name that team.
The Rattlesnakes.
I will give you $100 if you name that team.
26 homers, over 100 RBIs in a full season. And do you remember when Reggie Jackson praised his power? I think that's when Yankee fans all got excited. Yeah, you hear definitely. Reggie Jackson talk about a prospect, a kid who he says has some of the best power he's ever seen, and it's like, oh shit, when's this guy going to get here? But we thought Jesus Montero didn't have a position. This guy literally could not field at all. So, yeah, definitely good job by Cashman trading him.
Shelly Duncan hit a lot of home runs in the minor leagues.
Yes. But O'Brien did get some major league action last year, so maybe he'll get some this year as well. All right, so now the Colorado Rockies is the next team we're going to preview. The Yankees play 2 in Colorado, 2 at home versus them, so a home and home, June 14th and 15th, and then a week later, June 21st and 22nd. The Rockies are going to suck. Much like the Oakland Athletics, they have nobody on their roster, and the one guy on their roster who you say is a really exciting player is most likely going to be suspended for at least half the season, and that's Jose Reyes. Yes, they also have Carlos Gonzalez, who is a very good player, but I would actually think they might try and move him at some point this year because his contract is up. So I really see the Rockies stinking.
I was surprised that they didn't move him in the offseason, to tell you the truth, especially with the way that the outfield market kind of panned out and you had guys like Justin Upton who are still sitting out there. I felt like, you know, a guy like Carlos Gonzalez could have been had for a pretty decent deal for people not wanting to, you know, give that draft pick up for Upton. So I was actually very surprised he was still on their roster. And I they're going to be a bad team. I think they will absolutely move Carlos Gonzalez at the trade deadline. There's no reason they shouldn't. I'll tell you, Jose Reyes, we talked about him earlier, that he is going to be the poster child for Manfred's domestic dispute or domestic, you know, violence type of suspension. We saw Chapman get 30 games. I think Jose Reyes doesn't play this year. Obviously, it's not even in Major League Baseball hands right now because he's still, I mean, he's going through the court system. I mean, this guy hasn't even been tried yet. And so I don't know the details of the situation.
Yeah, he's
but,
not at spring training. He's not even participating yeah, he's not even in showing baseball up. Activities. So.
Right. So I don't think he's going to play this year at all. I could see him completely be gone. He may be in jail for all we know. Again, I don't know enough about the situation to talk about it. So I'll just kind of let the news play out as it does. But I could see them, especially if something actually does happen in the courtroom, even if he doesn't get time, but he's convicted of something, that you know coming really hard on Jose Reyes on a suspension. So I'll tell you the one thing that got me excited though: the June 14th and 15th. Is that at Colorado or is that at New York?
I do not know.
Okay, so my brother just moved to Denver, Colorado, and I have not been out there to visit him yet. So now I have my eyes on.
Well, does it make a difference which one it is? It's a week apart.
Yeah. I'm wondering so I can look up plane tickets and stuff. I'm just wondering. I'll look it up after the show. But yeah, this is exciting now. So I think I'm going to go to that game.
Nice.
Yeah.
A little mile so I'll tell high
you guys
action.
I'll tell you guys how Coors Field is.
Can you eat an edible and then go to the game and periscope
while
yourself?
Well, on weed, man.
We're going to preview the Padres and Giants next week, and that will be while we're at spring training, so definitely look forward to that. All right, so here's what we're going to do. We have a few mailbags that we're going to get to. Four of them are about Jorge Mateo. Clearly, he got the attention of Yankee fans, so we're going to record those separately and release that episode a day later than normal. So you'll get this one. You're listening to this one now. It's Tuesday. So tomorrow on Wednesday, we're going to release the Mateo mailbag episode. But before we get to those, let's do the mailbag from Rudy G. And I'm going to paraphrase it because it's a topic we already discussed. But there is some more news around it, so we want to mention it. So he's talking about the ticket policy, which we talked about 2 weeks ago, how the Yankees are no longer were having print-at-home tickets. You talked about the barcodes and everything. You got all technical and sciencey on everybody. Made my head spin. I don't even remember what you talked about. But Rudy G says that basically he's wondering why the Yankees are so out of touch with their fans. And there's actually some news that has come out that maybe they aren't as out of touch with what we think, and that's the fact that they met with StubHub on February 24th, sort of like undisclosed. We don't know what they talked about, but it might be sort of a resolution to this whole issue.
Well, we don't know exactly what it was. We don't know if it's a resolution or what. But to me, when you know this news broke, was right around that time, and obviously we heard the comments from the front office and all of that stuff. And we know that StubHub, if you get a ticket on the game day, basically Rudy moved away from New York 20 years ago. And he's wondering, you know, what it's like for the Yankee fan who is going to the game, who lives in New York, leaves work, wants to go, and can't get a ticket on StubHub or whatever, and then get it on his phone. So the fact that they met with StubHub, to me, at that point, and this is going off of Francesa, too. I don't know if you guys listen to Francesa, but I usually have him on from at least 1 to 4, 1 to 5. And he was talking about the fact that it's very telling, and I agree with him. It's very telling when the Yankees met with StubHub. They met with them, what did you say, February 24th, right?
Yeah, that's, it was like a few days after the Lon Tross comments, which were totally out of touch with the Yankee fan.
But it's so what to me, like, you're not going to have a meeting with StubHub to just talk about nothing. I mean, why would that meeting even occur unless you were looking at some type of resolution? So, you know, we're just dissecting this and kind of, you know, insinuating that possibly there is something happening. But I mean, when this news broke, that was one of the things that I thought off the top of my head. I'm like, this is a technology issue at this point. Obviously, someone's got to release the technology for this to happen. But with the outcry, I see something happening. There's no doubt that they just can't let this happen. It's just too much against the local New York Yankee fan, and that's just, it's just completely out of touch and not a good thing for New Yorkers. So, to me, this is them trying to work on the problem. And you know, again, like I see by at some point in the season, early in the season, I could see a resolution and some kind of a medium ground coming out.
Yeah, probably for this season alone, because it's right around the corner. But they do definitely want to get that ticket exchange off the ground. That's clear.
Yeah, no doubt. But the fact that they're going to be limiting Yankee fans, I mean, they're going to see it in the attendance. So I think that'll become one of the more obvious signs to them, is that people aren't showing up because they don't have the ability to show up at the last minute anymore. And I definitely see a resolution to this, because it's dollars and cents. When people aren't in the stadium, they're losing money, and the Yankees don't like to lose money.
Rudy also mentions that he's going to be at spring training March 13th, which you might still be down there, right?
Yeah, possibly. I got to see what time my flight leaves, but if I want to say I got a later flight so that I could possibly catch that game on Sunday. So, yeah, Rudy, hit me up. I know you and I have talked on Twitter a couple times, so definitely hit me up. Let me know when you're going to be there. Andrew will definitely be there on Saturday too, leaving early Sunday. So if we can hook up just to say hello or drink a beer or whatever, anybody who's down there, we're wide open. We'd love to meet as many of you guys as possible. We're going to be walking around with Bronx Pinstripe shirts on. So if you see us, come say hello. Yeah, we'd love to just meet as many people as possible.
Yeah, speaking of my flight on Sunday, there's roughly a 30% chance I miss it because it's at 7 a.m., but that's on daylight savings time, so it's really at 6 a.m.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so I might just not go to bed.
Oh, God. Okay. Rudy, I might not want to see you on Sunday. I might be in a bad situation.
We're pulling an all-nighter is what I'm telling you.
Yeah, and I'm not equipped for that anymore.
No, you're not. I am not equipped for that anymore. All right, so as I said, check out that Mateo mailbag. A lot of good stuff in there. So we'll get to those. We're going to record those now, but you'll be hearing those tomorrow. Scott, any last words?
That's it for me. I was pumped up to watch baseball this week. It was a lot of fun. Susan and John got me through a couple of games, so I'm excited that they're extended too. If you guys don't like them, give them more of a chance. Know that they're older and that they love baseball and they don't get your Snapchat references, and that's okay.
Roger Clemens is in George's box.
All right, we'll talk to you guys.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.